If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy: family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TeladoC Health/whatsyourwhy.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring. Chris, I want to cut to the chase and hit you with a real question right off the bat as you do these hand signals to me on our Zoom video chat. Are you a pro Las Vegas Summer League person or an anti-Las Vegas Summer League person?
I'm much closer to anti, and if I'm pro, it's for like 2 days max, especially in person, like televised, whatever. If you want to stay up till 2 in the morning, 2:30, like people did yesterday, so watch the Pistons, more power to you. I don't have it in me. I don't have that dog in me for Summer League. And I think it's, you know, like in all fairness, I think for fans, it's people have an immediate kind of like pit in their stomach where they're like, oh no, there's no NBA basketball to watch. I don't think that's as true for all writers, particularly ones that, you know, travel a whole lot to cover the games or are counted on to cover a whole lot and cover, you know, to write a whole lot, to podcast a whole lot. There needs to be a natural break. And I've said this before. I think I've said this on our podcast before. I don't like the NFLization of the NBA where like every day there's still something on the NBA calendar every day. It makes it feel like there's no off season. And while we're not out there playing, you know, 4 games in 5 nights, I also don't want to feel like I'm writing 4 days in 5 nights. Or studying 4 days and 5 nights. Like, I want there to be a natural break. I want to be able to celebrate my sister's birthday. I want to be able to go to a family friend's funeral if I need to be there without having to wonder, like, oh, what's going on with, like, players that might not even be in the league in 2 months. And that's kind of what we're talking about. I understand the development purposes. That's fine. And like I said, I understand why fans are into it. But I do think that there's real life stuff happening that we have to kind of not be able to partake in as writers, as people, during the actual season. So it's nice to have like an off season. And so I don't get really, really into it now.
So it's kind of like a work-life balance thing for you.
Yep.
Neither of us
and 110 degree weather in Vegas, like you and I were saying.
Weather is, yes, the weather is like a huge deterrent for me personally. I despise it. Neither you or I are there this year, fortunately/unfortunately, depending on, well, I guess it's fortunately for both of us because I'm not a huge fan either. I like seeing people. I like talking to people. The basketball it's really thrilling, like at the start, I think, when you first get to see the rookies, like the big name rookies, and then it just wears off. And I once did the whole thing. I don't know if you've ever done the whole thing.
Oh my God. You should probably still have PTSD from that.
I did
like a week and a half one time.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was bad. And you're there. And it's like after that first full weekend of games, you know, when the Lakers fans pack the arena and the games are sold out, then it like dwindles. And then it's like you could sit as close as you want because by the end of that thing, like everybody has to go back to real life. They have to go back to work. They have to, you know, they have to fly back home. They can only stay in a hotel for so many nights. So it's really, it dwindles. And then you kind of, it turns into that Fresh Prince meme where Will Smith is the only one standing in the living room where no one else is there. And you're kind of like, why did I stay here for 2 weeks? When it's really hot and I've lost 30 pounds from the heat, you know, like it just doesn't, it's not generally worth it to stay that long. Or better yet, like when I was a beat writer covering the Knicks, if the team you're covering is still in the tournament, because it is a summer league tournament, you know, that the teams that are in there till the end, if you're a beat writer, you're probably staying that whole time. But then you realize like the best players have been pulled. Because, you know, teams are not going to take a chance with, like, Chet Holmgren playing an entire 2 weeks when it's clear that he's too good to play every night and that you don't want to risk him getting hurt. So it's just kind of like, why am I here? After the first 4 or 5 days, let alone 2 weeks.
Agreed. So on today's show, we'll be giving a few first reactions to the biggest names at Summer League, which started yesterday. Well, it started this week in Salt Lake, but yesterday in Las Vegas. We'll be opening up the mailbag. We'll be diving into some more Kevin Durant trade hypotheticals. We'll wonder if the Wizards have officially become the most hopeless organization in the NBA and so much more. But first, a quick reminder to please keep your emails coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. All right, Chris, so let's jump right in and start with a bit of Summer League talk or a bit more Summer League talk. Last night, the Houston Rockets and the Orlando Magic faced off in a game that was, I guess, headlined by the Paolo Banchero, Jabari Smith Jr. matchup, the first overall pick in the 2022 draft and the third overall pick. Did you happen to catch that one or catch the highlights or just, what was your reaction, if so, to those two kind of making their pseudo NBA debuts?
Yeah, I did. I did at least catch the highlights of it. I've not sat and watched a full Summer League game. Like I've watched maybe in passing for a few minutes. I watched some of Chet's, first game, but just what I liked about it really was just that those two guys kind of went at each other, Banchero and Smith, which was, I always enjoy that. It kind of makes it feel more like an all-star game, which it kind of is, you know, with regards to the two stars of the two guys that, you know, everybody's come to see. It's like when you see Kobe and Bron or something like that, where it's like everybody wants to see one particular matchup. I mean, in terms of not necessarily those two as far as how great they are, but more so like on the level that they're playing at, probably, you know, as far as in relation to everybody else. So seeing that and obviously seeing the play where Banchero got the block on Smith, it's just fun to watch. No big, massive takeaways. I feel like, if there's any takeaways so far that I have from Summer League generally, it's probably more so with Chet in that first game. And again, like he's only going to play for a couple games here in Summer League because there's no need to have him here longer. So the biggest takeaway I think you have from Summer League with everybody that's at that level is like, this guy can play. This guy, we can see the eye test of what we saw for the draft stuff is what we're seeing now. This is why they went as high as they did. If you don't see those flashes, as a fan, I think that's when you get worried a little bit. And so, you know, no massive takeaways. I feel like I'm trying not to strain myself watching highlights, watching 2-3 minutes of games here and there. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I go into it with basically a total clean slate. I've never really watched Jabari play basketball before in a game. I think I've seen Paolo play maybe once or twice in an actual game because I watched some of the NCAA tournament.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Paolo reminds me, and I said this in our text thread, he reminds me of like a young Blake, like not as athletic, but the way he just like that size and that that passing ability, that vision. I think he's even more decisive than young Blake was in his early prime. And that's just really like super exciting to see. I think he's going to be amazing. He had 6 assists in this game. I thought he was, you know, I think coming in, again, this is just a first impression, but coming in, the red flags, if there were any red flags, were about his defense. And I mean, I didn't really think that that was super glaring.
Right.
Moved pretty well. Good looking outside shot. Ultimately finished with an inefficient performance, but that's perfectly fine. Like you said, it was really cool to see him go at Jabari and just be fearless. And I was kind of blown away by the passing, which could, if that is his best trait as a pro, then the Orlando Magic probably made the right pick. So that's really fun to see. Jabari, our colleague Jeremy Wu, has been really high on Jabari Smith throughout the past few months. He had him number one in his mock. And yeah, you know, it's the first game. Nothing he did really blew me away, I don't think. And you can see the potential defensively. One of the things that got me a little bit nervous, not nervous because it's one game, but what I want to see with him is the handle develop. I do think that he will need to be able to create his own shot on the perimeter at some point in his career. I'm sure he will figure that out, but the handle was a little bit rigid for me. So that's just something to keep an eye on, but you know,
You bring that up and I'm wondering now, like, what's the best player in the league that just best like wing player in the league that just has no handle? And I'll say this at the I'll say this after having watched the finals for a little bit. Hopefully you don't get mad at
me. Just brutal. Why would you even say you're evil?
I mean,
evil,
it's not my fault. Aaron. Your team turned the ball over 93 times in a deciding championship game. I mean, but we like even with that, in all seriousness, like Jaylen Brown had some rough games handling the ball. The Warriors started to play kind of, you know, high IQ basketball, realizing that he's going to go this way with the ball most of the time. You could still play really well and pretty efficiently despite not having a great handle, particularly during the regular season when teams are not locked in the way they're going to be during a playoff series. But absolutely. And that's the sort of thing that, like, I feel like a lot of the stuff, because it's not, I mean, these guys are practicing with each other for maybe a day. And then after that, they play every day virtually. They might get one day off during the week or 2 days off during the week or something like that. But you know, they're not playing at the highest level. It's kind of freestyle to some extent. You get games like yesterday where it's like the number one and the number two are playing against each other more so than the team or whatever. So I'm not too worried about it. There'll be time for it to develop. But I think there's no question that Paolo had a better outing, even without the most efficient shooting night. Just kind of looked the part a little bit more. But it's early. We've seen it before. I know Knicks fans had like conniptions when RJ Barrett was shooting poorly at Summer League a couple of years ago in his first year. Kevin Knox was incredible like his first Summer League. It's like it doesn't matter. Like it matters only and able to see, like, you could at least see the flashes again. You want at least want to see those and not feel like you drafted someone that doesn't resemble at all what you saw on film against college players. And as long as you see some of it, you'll be fine. Because the other thing is they're not going to be asked to do everything necessarily on day one when they're playing with other legitimate pros up and down the roster.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, if Jabari is a 6'10 Klay Thompson, then that's unbelievable. And you already have some pieces that'll be handling the ball and trying to set him up. And you'll probably be adding more over the years, but I'm sure he'll figure it out. I'm just, you know, it's one game. I just have, this is a podcast. We need things to talk about.
Oh, no, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Let's talk about Chet, because he was just obviously incredible spellbinding. In his debut with the Oklahoma City Thunder, he had the numbers, 6 blocks, a million points. He just kind of did it all. And just watching him play, he's super fluid. He had the Dirk-esque one-legged fall away, which was just beautiful to see. I guess, what did you make of Chet Holmgren? And even, you know, he played twice, I believe. Yeah, he's played two games, and he sat out last night because, as you said, he's just, like, kind of too good for this. But he's going to play in Vegas, I would assume. But what did you make of Chet Holmgren, just watching him play against NBA, some pseudo NBA players, but NBA level competition?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be a player right away. I mean, like, I don't think in these, what I'll say, like, I don't think in these terms, because I don't play it, and probably, I won't say shouldn't play it, but don't play it. I don't play fantasy sports, but I feel like Chet would probably be a pretty good fantasy pick, because he's going to stack numbers. He can shoot. Obviously, we knew that. He's going to block a lot of shots. I could imagine that there are going to be nights where he's on the cusp of a triple-double as a rookie, and he's going to get opportunities because of the team that he's playing on. So, I mean, he looked incredible, first of all. Kevin Pelton wrote kind of a piece on his strengths and weaknesses in summer league so far, and, you know, the apparent strengths and weaknesses. He brought up a point that I really hadn't considered, but I guess when you watch it, it did stand out. It's one thing for guys his height and his size to be able to make threes. It's completely different for guys his height and his build to make threes off the dribble. Mm-hmm. And that stood out a couple times, because that, you know, like, that's like Durant type stuff that you see people at that size. We don't even see Giannis really comfortably do that. Well, obviously Giannis is not a great shooter, but just the fluidity.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. I probably should have clarified that. But like the fluidity with which he does it, where, you know, essentially like a step back, or, you know, someone is playing him to try to take away his drive, which he had a couple of those over the course of the game where he, you know, line drives to the basket. But also that he is fluid and comfortable enough with this dribble to kind of create his own shot from three. You can't really go directly at him at the rim. I'm sure he'll get dunked on a few times at some point. But like, you're going to really have to bring it to kind of dunk over the guy or get off a shot over the guy. So he, like, watching him, I kind of saw a blend of several different players. I know in your outline, you kind of said, like, who does he remind you of? And there's not one guy. I don't think there's really one guy that we've ever seen like him. But yeah, dominant for summer league. And I'm really curious to see what it'll bring about when we see him against consistent NBA level competition against vets and stuff like that.
We saw him have to guard Kenny Lofton Jr.
Fun stuff.
Memphis, 280 plus pounds, listed at 280. I don't know how much he weighs. And that was a very intriguing matchup. It was like I was watching Mortal Kombat, honestly, like pick your fighter. I really want to see the first time Chet is going up against the Pelicans and Zion. Like, will his body snap in half? Like, just how will that go? That could be very,
yeah, my man's got ugly, some Gumby-esque qualities as far as the way he's built. Like, I mean, not that that's news to anybody, but it's kind of crazy. Like, he's built like a pogo stick, and, you know, but holds his own more often than not. One of the things Pelton pointed out, which I agree with, is like, that is going to be one of his tests when he gets to NBA. Is like, he's so tall and so fluid for someone that tall. And I remember this being the case with Porzingis when I covered him too, is like, the rebound, he's going to grab plenty of rebounds, but he's going to get a lot that just kind of fall to him anyway. He's going to have to box out better. He's going to have to kind of body up better. And, you know, I'm sure he can learn some tricks of the trade and, you know, coaches will work with him, but like, that's a skill of being able to box out and being able to hold people. You watch the finals, you know, there are several instances where you just watch rebounds. Marcus Smart and other guys down there, you just watch rebounds hit the floor first because you're boxing out so efficiently. It'll be interesting to see whether people just kind of shove him out of the way or whether they'll be able to do that, which size-wise they should be able to, but that's part of the skill of when you learn how to hold your own a little bit better, that, you know, Chet can hold them off at some point, but it'll be interesting to see how long that takes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm being a little facetious with the Zion and the Kenny Lofton stuff. Like, I think he'll be a very disruptive help defender, great rim protector. I think I've said this on the pod before, but someone told me who works in the NBA, works in a front office, that Chet's, for me to try to envision who Chet could be, like, think Kristaps Porzingis with the defensive ceiling or the defensive ability of Evan Mobley. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's just
terrifying.
Incredible stuff. So really fascinating prospect. I can't wait to see how his rookie season shakes out. And watching him on the floor with Josh Giddey, who, speaking of players who are way too good for summer league, like,
yeah,
what is
I hope
he
he's
doing
only
there?
Got another game or two that he's playing.
he
doesn't
dunked
need
on
to be
someone.
There.
I was like, yeah. Oh my god!
And I'm gonna go back to what you just said a minute ago. Like, I think he can be better than Porzingis has been offensively. Whether that means he scores more than the guy, you know, and Porzingis had stretches where he was averaging 35. You know, whether it was in Dallas, I know he had a stretch or two like that in New York where people thought he was like, you know, just going to slide in and replace Carmelo as a all-star level number one option. There were things that Porzingis couldn't do, and I think we see this a lot with big men sometimes where they aren't comfortable backing down guys that are smaller than them. We saw it with Karl-Anthony Towns at times in the playoffs too. And Porzingis would just kind of force bad shots. Again, this is just summer league, so we don't know yet. Like, we need to see more of it. We need to see it against better competition. But it just kind of seems like there's a more comfortability with Holmgren with certain shots. We were just talking about the off the dribble stuff, and the Dirk fadeaway that he just kind of threw in there at the elbow. I don't remember Kristaps really doing too much of that. Certainly not this early. Certainly not as a counter to something like I'm intrigued, like anybody, you know, we'll see what happens. The Mobley defense would be really high praise, but obviously he's got the shot blocking part of it down. He is pretty disciplined as far as when he leaves his feet versus when he doesn't. He kind of waits to see that the ball is actually leaving someone's hands to really jump. And, you know, that's a good skill to have as a defensive big, where you watch a lot of those guys have a lot of problems with foul trouble. So it'll be really, if he even approaches Mobley on defense, Kristaps on offense sort of player. I mean, we're talking about an all-star, a perennial all-star, obviously. And, that's obviously what you hope for when you draft someone that high.
It made me just think about the Thunder and their, like, just their short-term future, not even the long-term, which obviously looks very bright.
They could be in the playoffs pretty soon, right?
Maybe. I mean, their roster.
I thought this, Michael. So just say it, because you're not like I was thinking it too.
My brain there. Yeah. But I do think, like, I don't know if you remember last year, like, their defensive rating was like top tier, like top five, top seven or something for like a big stretch of the season. And, you know, they just signed Lu Dort, gave him the Richie Rich money. And it's like Lu Dort, Chet, a big backcourt. Shea is huge for a point guard. Giddey is huge. I don't know who the fourth guy is going to be right now, but they have a ton of length. They drafted for length and size. And I just think defensively their future is like that's going to be their identity. And it's going to be really hard to score on these guys going forward. So that's just really fun to see. And then offensively, the creativity with the backcourt, the scoring. There's a lot to kind of holes to fill there, I think, particularly in the depth department. But
yeah,
it's obviously super early in their rebuild. They still have a ton of picks and a ton of options and flexibility and all that. But defensively, their ceiling is just like crazy. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that if they really decided to put their foot on the pedal, which why would you, given the way they're building the team, they could make the playoffs in a year or two if they wanted to. You know, my response to someone that would say that's crazy talk, like, look at over the last 2 years when Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has actually played, because keep in mind, this is a team that, depending on how you feel about tanking, has probably held him out when he could have played. Like, I'm sure he's had legitimate injuries, but the extent to which they held him out for the length of time they hold him out for, the point in the season at which they're holding him out, where it's like, okay, we're trying to lose. And if you don't believe me on that, go back and look at that. I think they played the Pistons at one point, and they were kind of jockeying with the Pistons to try to have a worse record. And like the lengths that the Pistons went to, they took out Cade and literally everybody else for like the whole last quarter and a half. And I think the Pistons still won. The Pistons were playing like three guys that had never played in the NBA before, like that they pulled out from the G League somewhere. And, you know, they played them for like the last 18 minutes of the game, trying to tire their own guys out, and still managed to beat Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City has had stretches where they win four or five games out of six or seven. When Shai is out there playing, it's very clear they haven't really wanted to win. That's obvious. If they committed to the idea of keeping their guys in the rotation and keeping them on the court and went out and signed like a guy or two to help with the depth that they don't have, they would at least be in the conversation for the plan. It's just that they're not particularly interested in that yet. And why would they be, as they're building this thing up, as they're just trying to get as much young talent as they can? But I do think that there are aspects of this where, like, if Chet is really, really, really good, Giddy is, you know, who we've seen him to be, Shai is out there, Lu Dort is out there, they're going to have games where they just shut teams down, where it's impossible to get to the rim sometimes. And that translates to wins. Even if you don't have much offense, sometimes that will translate to wins, just because other teams will have horrible shooting nights against you. So we'll see what happens. I know that's not their aim yet, but you know, at some point you're going to have to start transitioning this into something where you want to win. And it doesn't feel like they have to be that far away from it. So we'll see.
I'm looking at the Western Conference standings from last season right now, and I feel
what were they,
like
11th, 12th?
And the, they were 14th.
14th. Okay, my dumbass. Let me shut up. No, let me shut up.
Okay.
So they were so second to last, Chris. Not 11, so not 12.
I think I'm looking at some of these teams that didn't even make the play-in. Portland is going to get better. The Lakers are going to get better. Maybe, I don't know. We'll talk about them a little bit later in the show. Spurs will be a lot worse. Utah finished fifth. Utah's going to be bad, I think. And we'll have plenty of time this offseason to talk about them. They're going to be bad. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if Oklahoma City had a better record than Utah. I don't know if that's like a crazy hot take or not, but
I got to see who they get back for some of the, like, if they
continue to tear it down.
I want to see what they, like, are they still an option? Is that somewhere where they would pay Ayton to come there? To try to start a rebuild, and if they do, they're probably not quite as bad as what, because they absolutely have the potential. And then obviously we're all still thinking and still tweeting the Brian Windhorst memes, like, why would Utah do that? And so there still may be more why would they do that moments, but you know, I don't know. I'm still really interested to see where Ayton's gonna end up, period. You know, it's just kind of a weird,
yes,
you know, he's an impactful player. He's not Kevin Durant, but like, depending on where he goes, that matters, obviously. Thank you for saying that he's not. It's a weird situation. And like, if he were to end up there and you keep someone like Donovan Mitchell, it becomes a strange, like, you're probably not worse than Utah. Or I'm sorry, you're probably not worse than Oklahoma City at that point, you know?
Right. And they have a bunch of, like, Patrick Beverley, who tweeted he's going to take another team to the playoffs, which was really funny. Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt. There's some, like, good, solid role players on this team now around Donovan. Like you said, I don't know what their roster is going to look like on opening night. I don't know what they're going to do with Bogdanovich, Jordan Clarkson, some of these other pieces that kind of potentially make more sense elsewhere. So we'll see with that. Mike Conley also. I don't know if he's going to be there on opening night.
I hope not.
Okay, so speaking of bad situations, I wrote this story that's up on the site on SI.com today about Bradley Beal. Earlier this week, we learned that the Washington Wizards gave Bradley Beal a no-trade clause in his $251 million five-year max contract, not max extension, sorry. This is... I was kind of blown away by this. There have only been 9 players in NBA history who have ever had no-trade clauses in their contract. There is no current player in the league with a no-trade clause in his contract. And, you know, I don't typically enjoy writing columns where I just kind of tear down an organization. Exactly. I don't like doing that. I don't often do that. But I just thought that this was so egregious, like, kind of embarrassing. And it made me think about the Wizards and just, like, you know, words like dysfunctional and hopelessness and just kind of splashing around in their own futility. And it made me think, like, are they that team right now? Are they, like, number one on those rankings of just the worst franchises in the league right now? And before we kind of get into that, just what did you make of them giving Beal, who's 29, he's a 3-time All-Star, he's only made 1 All-NBA team in his career, 3rd-team All-NBA selection in 2021, been to the playoffs in 5 of his 10 seasons, never been out of the second round. Just what did you think of, you know, the max contract and then the no-trade clause? Just what was your reaction to that?
I hope she doesn't listen to this. I'm going to just say it. I was in a relationship for the better part of 5 years that after about 3 years really didn't make fundamental sense anymore. Now that I'm out of the relationship, I can say after those 3 years, it really didn't make sense anymore. And sometimes you stay in situations that don't really serve you because you're so used to being in the situation that you don't want to be outside of the situation, even though it's not good for you anymore. And I mean, this is just a contentedness. Like, they're content to not make the playoffs. I don't understand. Like, I from the outside can look at that and not understand it. I think that's most of us. You know, I've been in a situation where I was not that happy, but I was like, well, you just try to make it work, and that's not, you know, that's not going to satisfy your fans. So it doesn't make sense fundamentally. I would imagine that at his money, you know, it's going to make it more difficult for teams to kind of slot him in trade wise. You know, I would imagine that at some point he'll get traded. I would hope at some point that he'll get traded for the sake of everyone, because I imagine at some point he'll want to win.
If you're the team and you know this, or you should know this, right? Or it's malpractice don't. What is going on? Why did you give him that? The Golden State Warriors.
Who's his agent? Because you know he's got a really, really good agent if he was able to force that. Because that's the one part that doesn't really make sense to me either, is the no trade. If
he's represented by Mark Marlstein, who's one of the best agents.
Shout out to Mark.
NBA.
Yeah. He's here in Chicago. That makes no sense. I mean, like, that made no sense, because the likelihood, and we heard the rumors were, it was like that weird week where it was that Beal knew what his decision was, but that he wasn't going to say which way he was leaning. And it's like, okay, so we're like, so he's staying. We basically all knew that. We read the tea leaves there.
Was that just negotiating to get the no trade clause?
What the hell that was. I mean, like, but like, if he wants the money, which I, look, like, maybe he's got cold feet about leaving. You're a free agent, man. Like, you can do what you want. Like, people might badmouth you a little bit. That comes with the territory of being a max guy, a franchise guy. But he could have left. Everybody would have understood it. Washington fans probably would have gotten over it. And it allows everybody to kind of have a clean slate and go do what you want to do. Washington badly needs to rebuild. We watched them try to rebuild and retool around Beal last year. You liked the stuff that they did last year, and in fairness to them, they got out to a really nice start last year. There were always questions about whether it was sustainable or not. It didn't work. That's fine. It hasn't worked for a while. It hasn't worked with Beal as the lead guy. It didn't work with Westbrook. It didn't work when they traded Westbrook away, which shout out still to the Wizards for being able to trade Westbrook away to a team that thought it was a contender and very quickly was not. But I mean, like, you've tried, and that's really all you can do. There's no obligation for you to then hand someone a $251 million contract with a no trade clause in it. That's the, like you said, that's the part that fundamentally everybody would assume you're going to have to trade this man at some point because you're probably not going to win. So that should have been the sticking point there, honestly. I can't imagine what more you really have to do to convince someone to stay other than giving them the biggest possible contract you can. If the no trade clause is the sticking point, then let them walk. And that sounds brutal, but let him do it. Sign and trade his ass somewhere else.
He wouldn't. He would not have walked, though. That's the thing.
Right. I'm sure he wouldn't have.
The difference between a four-year deal with 5% annual raises, which is the most he could get it from any other team, that's $186.1 million versus $251 million over 5 years. He got a player option in the final year of his deal. He has the 15% trade kicker. And I said Golden State Warriors earlier because, look, there's not a lot of players in the league who can qualify for the no trade clause. You have to have played at least 8 seasons. You've had to have played at least 4 consecutive seasons with the team that's giving it to you. So there's not a lot of guys who qualify for it. It's why, you know, Giannis, Jokic, Joel Embiid, like name your best players ever or best active players, and they just haven't qualified yet for this type of perk in a deal. Steph Curry did qualify. He asked for one coming off a championship, coming off his third straight finals appearance. He was a 2-time MVP. He was Steph Curry in his prime. Asked for the no trade, didn't get it. Didn't get a player option in the 5th year of that deal. Mm. And I mean, it's just, it's like, what are we even doing if you're the Wizards? Like, I don't understand. Like, you could think of a scenario where, you know, talking about other dysfunctional franchises, you have like your Sacramento Kings, you have your New York Knicks. I'll even throw the Lakers in there. I think those are like the 3 teams that really stand out to me. It's just like, what are you doing? How are you running your shop right now?
Mm-hmm.
If you were to trade, like want to trade Beal to those, because those are the types of teams that would take a contract like this and give you whatever you want, really. And you can't just do that now because Beal's going to be like, I don't want to go to the Sacramento Kings. And I have the right to say, you're not even picking up the phone. I don't want to go to the New York Knicks. They still stink. They're terrible. It's just so ridiculous to me and comical, and it feels like we're making so much about this, like one little thing in a contract.
No. It's a big deal. It's two thoughts. One, I saw that stat about the no trade clause, and I think the way you just framed it is probably because I think Bobby Marks was the one that pulled up the stat, which is a great stat. I immediately was like, no, there have been other no trade clauses. There used to be. You go back in time, contracts were crazy. It was like the Wild West in the early 90s with Chris Webber had a player option in his deal after the first year of his rookie contract. And he used it to leave, obviously. I mean, he used it to force a trade, basically, to the Bullets at the time. So there was that. And I had in my book about the 90s Knicks that Stanley Roberts, a backup center, Shaq's backup at LSU, who also was paired with him in Orlando, his backup center in Orlando held out when the Magic tried to trade him in a 3-team deal that the Knicks were going to get Doc Rivers and Charles Smith back in when the Knicks traded out Mark Jackson. He had a no trade clause in his rookie contract. So, like, there have been other no trade clauses. I imagine that the way Bobby meant it was exactly what you just said in probably more modern times of like a guy that is making the most amount of money that he can from a team where he's been with them for at least 4 consecutive years or whatever. That's probably what he meant, but it's happened. So that was my first thought, was like, that stat didn't make sense to me. It does now within the framing you put it. The second thing is like, I think it's really noteworthy here that as we talk about the Wizards, and either if you want to go as far as to call them dysfunctional, if you want to say that they're overly content in a losing situation, whatever you want to you know, however you want to characterize it. It's really fascinating that, like, we're watching a team like the San Antonio Spurs of all teams tear it all the way down. Like, a team that was good for two decades, was great for most of that time. Mm-hmm. And then we're watching them tear it down. We're watching the Pacers tear it down, a team that had not had a top five draft pick, has not had a top five draft pick dating back to like the 1970s, the 1980s. The Utah Jazz, another team that has that same train of thought where they're just not going to bottom out. Smaller market, worried about the fan base and worried about losing a fan base in a small market, worried about not having a guy to build the team around. Those teams are looking at the calculus and bottoming out. So teams that historically have said we would never do this are doing it. Meanwhile, you have the Washington Wizards doing this with Beal and just kind of agreeing to probably not even be a playoff team for the foreseeable future. Maybe they luck up 1 year. Maybe they catch lightning in a bottle and do, you know, maybe they have like an Atlanta Hawks type year. But that happened when the Hawks were really loading up, not when, you know, not when you re-signed a guy that can't really, I won't say has shown he can't take you to the promised land, but pretty much. And he's a very, very, very good player. But that didn't make a lot of sense. That didn't really track with me. And the no trade clause was kind of like the cherry on top. You could make the argument that the max didn't even make sense. Not that he doesn't deserve it, but that if you have to give it to him at that money with that team, that it just you probably should look elsewhere, figure out a fix. Should have traded him before is probably the best answer.
Yes, you should have traded him before. They backed themselves into a corner. You look at the roster now. There's really no blue chip prospect. I've never seen Johnny Davis, their number 10 overall pick in this year's draft, play basketball. Maybe he's really good. He also plays the same position as Beal, I think. Mm-hmm. Denny Avdia, you know, we've watched him play. Really interesting defensive, versatile wing. Haven't really seen the offensive game come along too much. Rui Hachimura had his season that was he was dealing with mental health issues at the start, and so that was kind of, I think he's just a bit of a question mark going forward. And then there's just like a bunch of role players, like Monte Morris. I love Monte Morris, but, you know, he's your starting point guard now.
Yeah.
And I look at the Eastern Conference. Yes, Kristaps Porzingis is probably your second best player. They haven't played together yet. They haven't played a minute, so I don't want to say it can't work or anything like that. But it's just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I
hear you.
I'm just down 100% on this situation. And
me too.
Yeah. So, okay, let's move on. And I asked a question of you in our outline. That is, I've been rolling around in my brain for a few days now, and it's about Kevin Durant. It's about the trade hypotheticals around the league. The team in question that I want to talk about real quick is the Pelicans. They signed Zion Williamson to the 5-year max extension. That's a done deal. He cannot be traded. And you would think that just kind of takes them out of the running for this, but it does not. They still have Brandon Ingram, who is coming off a very impressive postseason debut, where he at times, if not the entire series against the Phoenix Suns, looked like the best player on the court. He was amazing. And the question that I have is, like, if you're the Pelicans, what is stopping? Like, do you throw Brandon Ingram and, you know, they have all these first round picks, not as many as they once did, but a lot of first round picks, all of their own, I believe, or not all of their own, but most of their own, and a couple Lakers picks and a Bucks pick still from the Jrue Holiday trade. Like, why aren't they just like the front runner here? Is this package enough to get KD? If you are the Pelicans, would you think twice about including Brandon Ingram? Just what are your thoughts here about them as a potential trade partner?
Yeah, to your most basic question, do they at least have enough to be in that conversation to get him? Yes, I think undoubtedly they do, in part because they're their top prospect, not even prospect, their best player is someone who's young enough fundamentally and talented enough, I think, to get any team's attention. You know, if we all saw that report, I think it was Chris Haynes' report about what Brooklyn asked for from Minnesota. I think that was Towns.
Vince Goodwill, I believe, had that report.
Okay, if it was Vince, I apologize. The report was like insane because it was like not knocking the reporting, but just if that's what Brooklyn actually asked for. If
Give
they
us
asked
your team.
For Towns and Anthony Edwards and every draft pick that you've ever had and everyone that you'll ever get and some other stuff, bruh, like, and swaps. No, you would be crazy to ask for Towns, let alone Towns and Edwards. Like, video game don't ask for that when the computer trades are turned on. Like, no. But, you know, like, that and the idea of Phoenix, if they ask for Booker, you want someone who's basically already an all-star but young enough that you can still build your team around them. Like, that's clear. That's what Brooklyn would want. Ingram fulfills that. You can debate whether he's even near the level of the other people that we're talking about, Edwards, Towns, you know, Booker. You could have that debate. You could have that conversation. But Ingram is an all-star. Ingram is someone that, you know, you could make the argument that he's the best player on his team, if not very close to it. He's young. He has a really, really unique skill set. He's got unique length. He's not finished developing as a player. He's getting better. And like you said, they have all these picks. They've got good picks. They've got Lakers picks, which are good picks right now to have. So yeah, you could be in that conversation. Would I do it? Probably not. And I think it comes down to the fact that like Durant is 34. Your other guy that you feel really excited about when he can play, if and when he can play, is Zion, who are just on completely different wavelengths as far as age. And like, I'm not throwing the farm at Kevin Durant for that situation. It would also depend on what else you had to give up, I guess. But I'd like to see Zion healthy again before I throw him and Durant out there. And by the way, Durant has struggled to stay healthy too. I'm not real excited about doing that, if only because you've got mismatched ages, basically. And I would rather have Ingram on his timeline with this group. And by the way, we haven't been able to see Ingram and Zion and this new cast of people play together.
CJ, Herb.
It's a lot of talent. And it's like, it's talent that actually seems to blend pretty well. You know, we'll see how that changes when Zion comes in. But I would prefer to see that with guys that are on a similar enough timeline. I know CJ's not that young.
He's 30.
But I would rather see that than throw Durant into the mix, which all of a sudden it has to happen like now. Whereas with New Orleans, as they're currently constructed, like you've still got time. You've got time for Zion to get into a rhythm and kind of work himself into a lather, as opposed to like the clock is ticking. Like, I don't know how long Durant should age fine, aside, you know, injury stuff aside, should age fine. But I would prefer to not have to look at a ticking clock, you know, for the next 3-4 years, which you would have to do if you bring in Durant for someone that is talented and ascending and Ingram.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying. I get the timeline. I get the want to slow boil this, to just build around Ingram and Zion, still have the picks and the flexibility going forward. If the package is, here's my hypothetical package for you. If it's Ingram, and this works, if it's Ingram, Garrett Temple, New Orleans' own first round pick in 2023, 25, 27, plus an unprotected pick from the Bucks in 2027. Is that enough? Or are you okay with that if you are both sides? Or are you still, if you're the Pelicans, I don't want to give up all that draft equity plus Ingram to add a guy who's going to be 34 next season to my roster. Is that?
I mean, I think it's more of a conversation than what I was saying before. You know me, I hate trade machines. I think I probably have them in my pop-up blockers, like trade machines count too. Is I hate them. I despise them. Like I go like this with the crucifix. Like I don't want them anywhere near. I don't want keep them from around your boy. Anyway, so if you're not giving up any like key member of the team other than Ingram, I think it's more of a conversation. They've got so much young talent on that team, even just, you know, they've got guys on that team that would be nice young pieces that I imagine Brooklyn would want to be in on, that they would prefer over Garrett Temple. Garrett Temple would make the trade work, but I imagine that Brooklyn would ask for more than that and probably say, we need more than that beyond just Ingram. Maybe they wouldn't. If you could get it done like that, I could understand the logic behind it. I probably still wouldn't pull the trigger, but I think a lot of people would. My thing, though, to what you were saying is like you used the phrase slow boil. Which is funny when we're talking about New Orleans because of their food. I don't know how much of a slow, you know, like a soft pedaling that is. Like they look pretty ready to compete. Maybe contend is a strong word. 2 years from now, they could be a real contender in the West. Maybe that's a little early. Maybe it's not. It's hard to know exactly what they are until you see Zion is part of what they're doing. But they might not be that far away, and that's why I'm saying, like, I don't know that I would give up a ton of picks and a franchise level player. Obviously, him and Zion being that, you know, Ingram. I'm not sure I would do that just because you might decide that there's someone else that fits the timeline better that you can get instead of Durant. But I don't know. I would understand it. He's a generationally great player in Kevin, but I'm probably not pulling the trigger on that. It probably is one of the better packages that Brooklyn could look at and at least satisfy the idea of getting an all-star and then what else beyond that. But I'm probably not doing it.
I'm definitely doing that. Yeah. Okay. I think it's Kevin Durant, and I understand the concern. I'm kind of like, okay, so I have KD on a 4-year deal. I have Zion on a 5-year deal. At some point, hopefully, KD will be my second best player and still extremely good.
Yeah.
Like, that's just like, you know, and I get to keep basically my entire roster, all the wonderful young talent that's growing. That's just like kind of a, I don't want to say no brainer because I totally understand all the points against it. For me, that's like, are we winning the title next year? Maybe we win the title next year in 2 years. I don't know.
I'm not convinced you can get them with just Ingram, Garrett Temple and the picks though. Like look, if it's like, you'd have to give that up and Alvarado and like, that's not to say it would be a deal breaker for you. It probably isn't. But I'm just saying I get the impression that there'd be some other aspects of the team that'll have to be thrown in the deal for Brooklyn to say yes.
Could be like, totally what if Brooklyn says Trey Murphy and Herb plus Ingram instead of two of the picks or something like that?
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Is like, I get the impression, based on what you're saying, you'd still do it. It fundamentally
almost
changes.
Definitely.
Yeah, like it fundamentally changes the team a little bit. Look, maybe I should be totally comfortable doing it. You know, though, and you know this, so you know at least I'm consistent with it. Like, my rationale for a lot of things as it relates to KD is like, can he stay healthy? And it's been more of a question in the last couple of years for obvious reasons. I hesitate to pair him and Zion together without having seen Zion play in a long time, and while seeing KD like miss entire swaths of seasons. Like, I just don't love it. Like you said, at some point they'll be healthy together. I just don't want it to be when KD is 40, you know, or not when he's 40, because I guess his deal's not that long, but I don't want it to be like the Grant Hill situation where it's like, once he gets to Phoenix, he's good health-wise. So I know I'm throwing out crazy circumstances.
The worst case scenario.
They're not that crazy. It's kind of what I'm saying is like, the likelihood of both of them being healthy for an entire season, based on what we've seen the last two or three seasons, is like, it's not that great. But if you get them together, like you said, yeah. And I mean, like, there's something to be said for, even when Ingram was drafted, the hope was that his build and everything else, that he had, like, Kevin Durant was his prototype and that Brandon Ingram could grow into that. So, you know, what better way to, you know, to kind of have the Kevin Durant prototype than to actually have Kevin Durant? So I understand totally where you come from. Like, Kevin Durant is still in the conversation for best player in the world, so of course you would want him. I just don't love some of the aspects of what would be necessary to get him. Like, if you have to give up Ingram to do it, I don't love it. But obviously you'd have to even be in that conversation to get him. They have enough to get him. I think that part is clear, which is interesting because you would imagine it has to mean that because we haven't heard the Pelicans' name in that conversation, that they're not willing to budge or that they're not even making the offer. But teams fall in love with their own guys, so it could be that.
Okay, let's open up the mailbag real quick, Chris. We have this, I guess it's related to KD trade stuff, from coming in from Gotham, who writes, "Hi guys, Gotham here. Yep, that's my real name that my parents gave me.
Nice.
Huge fan of the show. I was wondering what you guys think of a trade where Kyrie and KD go to the Lakers for AD, Russell Westbrook, and one or two first round picks. The Nets would have Ben Simmons and Anthony Davis, who, although are distressed assets currently, who were once considered foundational players. Which team would say no if offered this trade? Thank you so much, Gotham. Unbelievable email. Great question. Which team says no? The Nets are saying no to that one. Let me tell you.
Sorry, Gotham. Yeah, sorry. Sorry to this man. Sorry to that man.
Yes.
Do you want to start? You want to take this?
Sure.
I think we're probably both on the same page here.
So, the first reason why, if I'm the Nets, I say no, is I can get so much more for Kevin Durant in a trade. That's the first reason. I need to recoup my draft equity. That's like a very important thing for me. One or two future first round picks from the Lakers, they might be very valuable, especially in 2029 when who knows what that organization is going to look like post LeBron. It's probably going to be very ugly. That's a valuable asset, but I can get so much. We were just talking about the picks that New Orleans would probably send over in a deal for KD. It's like,
including earlier Lakers ones, which could be a mess too.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So if I'm the Lakers on the other end, plus like Westbrook, like I know it's only 1 year, but like what am I doing? Like I have AD and I have Simmons. I'm like, I don't think I'm winning at a high, very high level there. Maybe I am, or maybe AD gets hurt, or maybe AD's like, I don't want to be here, and he leaves when his contract is up in a few years. Like, I don't know. The Lakers are just so desperate that, like, I mean, just we're going to have Kyrie conversations, I would imagine, throughout the summer once his situation is settled. But if they don't get Kyrie Irving for Russell Westbrook,
yeah,
this roster is kind of atrocious. Like, there's a very good reason that they are a very good chance, I should say, that they don't make the playoffs again. So this would be an incredible deal for them. They're not saying no to that. No, and it's really interesting their sudden obsession with the draft picks and their inability or unwillingness to include them in any transaction is really, I don't know what they're doing, because I know that they could be bad then, and those picks could be the key to not a bridge, but just like whatever is the next era of.
I think they're just
Lakers.
Playing hardball, Michael, like from the reports and everything, because like it doesn't even sound like there's anybody else trying to really get in on the Kyrie conversation yet. So it just sounds like they're trying to haggle in part because they know it's that just them. They're basically up against themselves, you know, as far as that. But there is a part of me that's like, just do it, because if you can get off of the Westbrook deal, if there's any way to do that in this trade, do it. Just like that. Literally, let me not be mean and say that was the entire reason they were terrible last year. It wasn't, but it was really high on the list. Let's put it that way. And if you could replace him with Kyrie Irving, it's an immediate talent upgrade. Aside from Kyrie's shenanigans, like I would probably prefer to have his shenanigans and his talent upgrade than have Russ, who really wasn't that dramatic until really later in the season, when he was just kind of speaking up about the social media harassment and the family stuff and the whole why doesn't Frank Vogel like me thing. I mean, whatever. Like, but I would rather deal with Kyrie. And I am very principled. Like, I've taken the Nets to task several times this offseason about, and during the season about, the back and forth. The Kyrie can't play. Oh, actually, we need you. You can play half the games. I've been on them about that, but I would still rather have Kyrie over Westbrook right now. If I had LeBron at his age and Anthony Davis at his injury risk, I would do it in a heartbeat. And so at some point you would say, stop haggling, just get it done. I agree with you on that. But yeah, you're spot on. Like, you didn't even really get into the fact of if Brooklyn takes this on, you're going to play Anthony Davis and Ben Simmons together. Like, the Anthony Davis that has shot like 4.5% from three, with a player that, you know, if he's outside the 3-point line, he's being left alone like he smells. Okay. I don't want that. You know, like, granted, like, you're going to have a really talented defensive team, but I don't really want that team. Ben Simmons is distressed. You're right. He's a distressed asset. Anthony Davis, to some extent, too, from what we're used to. I don't want both of them on the team at the same time. Like, you also lose the ability to really trade them because they're so distressed. You know, so I don't know why Brooklyn would do that with the other stuff that's out there. If you upped the number of picks the Lakers were giving up, maybe, but I think there's better stuff out there, which is crazy to say because we're still talking about Anthony Davis, but it's been a pretty rough 2 years for him since they won the title. So,
yeah, I think if the Lakers had LeBron, KD, and Kyrie, I mean, their defensive issues are still their defensive issues, in my opinion, and would probably be exacerbated because they don't have Anthony Davis anymore. But I'm just like, let's not overthink this. We can have LeBron and Kevin Durant on the same team. Like, what are we doing? Let's just...
Yeah, you do our options 100 times out of 100. Yeah. It was. It'd be a cool thought. It'd be a fantastic thought if it could happen. I don't see any way that it would.
Let's close with this email from Scarlett, who writes, "Hi, Pod and crew. As a longtime fan of the Pod and the Timberwolves, let me start with a few questions. Why is everyone sleeping on the Timberwolves? Did nobody watch them last year or the past few years when Kat played like a modern four with Jared Vanderbilt, Taj Gibson, Gorgui Dieng, or Kevin Garnett out there? Did nobody watch the Jazz last year or the past few years where Rudy played with a lot of traffic cones? Did nobody watch the finals where Robert Williams and Draymond Green didn't have to be guarded at the three-point line, yet both affected the game enough to play major minutes? Five-out basketball is all fine and good, but it didn't make the finals last year. One of the most common lineups the Jazz had over recent seasons was the following. Mike Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Bojan Bogdanovic, Rudy Gobert. Place that against what the Wolves will be doing, barring a D'Lo trade. D'Angelo Russell, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, Karl Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert. The Wolves will have upgraded every position in the starting lineup over what is the best five-man group the Jazz have ever put around Gobert. What other team in the West can seriously even dream to have three All-Stars before KD gets his wish to be on the Suns? Best regards, Scarlett." Thank you, Scarlett. Great email.
Very good email.
We talked a little bit about this in our last show. Rohan and I did. I like the Wolves. I like their team. I think that I'm positive and bullish about Kat and Rudy together in the front court. I think that they'll be very good. The criticism for me, first of all, I should say, just to address one thing, like, I think it's valid to wonder if Kat at the four defensively is going to be a nightmare or not. I mean, yes, he has played at the four in his career. And if you look at the data, Minnesota's defense when he's at the four has been atrocious every single season. So, yes, we have seen that. We do remember, understood who was around Rudy and all that. I'm high on this. I would not be shocked if they are the third best record in the Western Conference next season. I want to see what happens in the playoffs. I think they'll be good. I don't think they're a championship contender necessarily. They're just too young right now. Like, come at me in a year, 2 years. We'll see where Anthony Edwards is, where Jaden McDaniels is, etc. For me, it was always just about the negotiation. My criticism is always just, why did you give up all these picks for Rudy Gobert? That's like basically, that's basically it. I like the team, though. I like what they've built. I just think it's going to be really hard to improve it because you don't have a lot of draft equity. You can't trade any more picks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what do you think about Scarlett's email, Chris?
I think on a basic level, like the last question that Scarlett asked, what other team in the West can seriously even dream to have three All-Stars? I think you have a few. I mean, we've just got done talking about New Orleans. Would it take CJ McCollum having a really nice year in addition to Ingram and Zion? Probably, but like they could have three All-Stars. Golden State, if Klay Thompson's not hurt. Hell, Golden State had three All-Stars with Andrew Wiggins. If Golden State's fans vote en masse, like we have three All-Stars that way. Utah, the team that he referenced in this email. I assume Scarlett is a guy, but I guess it could be a woman too. Anyway, Utah, the Utah team he referenced had three All-Stars with Conley and Gobert and Mitchell. So like it's happened before. Having three All-Stars does not somehow make you more formidable. It generally happens when you win a lot, which Minnesota can absolutely do. Like I would put Minnesota in that 55 win range. Could theoretically win 60. I don't see it happening, but it could happen. You know, we just watched Memphis have a great season out of, I won't say nowhere, but like nobody was expecting that. And on paper, this team has, I think most people would say before they saw this past season, this Minnesota team will have more top end talent than that Memphis team did. So is it possible? Absolutely. Are there questions and very relevant questions here? Some of which will probably be even more focused on come playoff time. Yeah. I mean, like it's a team that is going to be built. And I think that it might be a smart gamble just from the standpoint of if we can have a team that's going to win 50, 55 games every year with this group, we'll roll the dice that we can figure it out 1 year where we just, you know, we kind of run through teams in the postseason. We get to the conference finals. We get to the finals. You roll the dice with that. It might not ever be enough to win the whole thing. But that's a gamble that for a team that really is rarely in the playoffs in Minnesota, that you maybe this was the time to make a gamble. I think all of our issue with this, you, me, other people that think the way we do about basketball, was just it was such a big haul to hand over. Not to mention that a lot of the picks were unprotected. That's the bigger problem with it. It's not the construction of the team, although there are questions about that that are very fair. It was more, is this enough to get you over the top considering that you just mortgaged basically your whole future on it? And, you know, and on some level you feel a little bit better about it than maybe you would with some other trades because you've got two guys that are big-time scorers, and you've got one really, really great defender. So the likelihood that you would have like two of those three guys out or all three of them out, it's the same reason, theoretically, that the Lakers made the trade they made last year for Westbrook was like, well, at least we'll always have a star or two out there because they won't all be hurt at the same time.
That's why it was what led to the Nets imploding, the Harden trade.
Right. So it's flawed, but it doesn't like it can the idea behind the trade and how much you gave up for it can be flawed. It doesn't mean that we're expecting the Timberwolves to be bad. The criticism is because of how much was given up in the trade. I think it's a really fascinating gamble that they're taking and are making. And you know, I'm gonna be as intrigued to watch them as really any other team. I don't know if they're gonna be at the very top of my league pass, but they'll be as intriguing to watch as anybody because they could realistically get to the finals. They could realistically lose in the first round, depending on who the matchup is. And it will be really, really, really interesting to watch either way.
It will be. Thank you so much, Scarlett. Great email. I think that's going to do it for today's show, Chris. Thank you so much for your expertise and your insight. Thank you so much to our listeners, the Open Floor Globe. Please keep the emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe. Everybody please continue to enjoy the NBA offseason.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.